Welcome to a very special episode of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor, and today I'm doing something a little different, as I tend to do from time to time. This is a highlight episode, and when I say highlight, I made a couple of excerpts from a member-only podcast that I thought was particularly good called 15 Tactics Elites Use to Preserve Their Power. And I know that sounds super conspiratorial, and it is not. There are a lot of incentives out there, and people act on incentives. They're not coordinated, but they want to preserve their good time and their good life. And I'm not talking about just billionaires and millionaires and billionaires and all that. I'm talking about an entire class of people, probably not that different from the ones doing this podcast or listening to it, who look the other way or at least have intense disinterest in finding out how their cake is made. And there are people who surface from time to time that disturb or threaten to disturb their status quo and their good time. And those people are often disappeared, and not in some violent way. There's not a bullet that comes from the library that hits you while you're, you know, waving to the crowd. It's not like that. It's bloodless, but it's almost equally powerful, sometimes even more so, because that person continues to exist as a living example of what not to do and whom not to threaten. Anyway, I think it's really interesting, and I think you'll get a good sense of what's in the episode, but there's no substitute for the real thing. So please go to patreon.com/McFuture to subscribe to hear the whole episode and lots of great member-only material. But if you can't for whatever reason, please, at the very least, share this with others and review it on iTunes. It really helps get exposure for the show, so give it 5 stars, and I'll read the review and maybe even read it on the podcast. Thanks so much. So let's jump right into the highlights. The veneer of caring is so powerful. That's why most of the major institutions, from the media to Hollywood to the tech industry, are leaning on what looks like leftist caring policies. Nothing of the sort. The appearance of caring is an incredibly powerful tool. It is a veneer behind which you can hide almost anything. That's why corporations are embracing all of this stuff, because it is powerful. If you look like you care, if you look like you have a rainbow of people working for your organization, if you look like, you know, you're helping the homeless and charity and whatever else that you're doing, you come off looking good. And it still works. And it works on a lot of people, because most people don't look that deeply. And because it works, you have this appearance of leftism that's really covering up elitism, corporatism, and a lot of power that is being preserved. And it's being preserved by a bunch of tools that I'm going to get into today. These systems are not serving a lot of people well. For example, why, after all these years, I'm talking decades, are people still living in ghettos? Why are there so many broken families, especially among minorities and the poor? Why are there so many, you know, so much drug addiction? There are a lot of incentives that motivate a lot of actions. And you know, you would think, oh, well, this one party is keeping people down. If only it were that simple. The places where a lot of these problems perpetuate are very wealthy, like Los Angeles, for example. I think they have, I forgot the statistic, I think they have like 1/4 or 1/5 of America's homeless in just Los Angeles. That doesn't include San Francisco, which has its own encampments. So you're talking about a really rich city with some very powerful industries that has this lingering, insane problem. And you can call it failure of government, you can call it a lot of things, but the incentives aren't there, the competence isn't there to fix it, but also there is an entire system around this that perpetuates the status quo. And the status quo always serves incumbents, always serves people who are doing well. And I'm not talking about just the elites. I'm not talking about just Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and all these other people. I'm talking about just someone who lives in a nice house in a nice area is going to vote their interests. For example, they are not going to split that sweet, juicy tax money that they pay for local taxes with school districts that don't have any money. That's just not going to happen. That's never going to happen. So they are playing a game to win, even though it doesn't always look like it. This is not a left-right thing. This is institutional power against individuals and against upstarts. At the heart of both parties is a certain kind of corporatism and power and influence and status. And these are things to be defended. And every single institution, especially media, are designed to defend it. And the reason media is so important as a control tactic is because it's out there. It's public. Everyone consumes it. Not only are they the messengers and the water boys for the elite, but they use academia and academic studies to back up their ideas and policies, no matter how specious. I wrote once that studies are like Bible passages. You can find one to support any conclusion you want. Most of these studies, even the ones that sort of look scientific, they're not. They're social studies, or at best, they're correlation studies that show that, oh, well, people who do this end up with this, whether it's cancer or whether it's a psychological problem or whatever it is. And a lot of it is a proxy for wealth because people with money have better resources and ways to take care of themselves, whether it's healthcare or mental health or exercise or whatever else. So if you look at it through that lens, most of these studies are total and utter bullshit, but they are used to a very effective and powerful degree by media to back up or create legitimacy for a lot of these issues that the left is putting forward. And the same thing goes for think tanks, but they're much less useful. They have shittier brands, bottom line. The right tends to use think tanks more because that's all they have. They've lost academia, not that they ever had it. They have no influence there. Number six. Infiltrate or coerce. So this was hilarious. Hilarious in a crazy, bizarre way. But you have to see the story, if you haven't followed it, of Governor Whitmer. There was a plot to kidnap her. The funny thing is, there were 16 people involved. 10 of them were spies. They were plants. They were put in there by the government. And those 10 convinced the other retards to go along with this plot. They didn't come up with the plot. The government came up with the plot and convinced these six imbeciles that this is a good idea. So now they're up on, I don't know, conspiracy charges and all kinds of things, but they were entrapped because they're idiots. This is a very common tactic. So there's a concept called agent provocateur. This is incredibly common and used by governments to squelch protests. So what they'll do is they send plainclothes agents into crowds, so protests, whatever, and have them get violent or destructive, start throwing bricks or setting things on fire. And once that happens, it creates an excuse to send the military or the cops or whoever to stop the protest and break it up. Look it up. There are countless examples of agent provocateurs. It may have happened during the summer riot for BLM or, you know, the affiliated ones. And same thing with January 6th. No one would know for sure. That's the crazy thing about this, because everyone ends up getting arrested or, you know, and the ones who are agent provocateurs clearly get let off, but the other people are now in trouble. So this is a very powerful tool. And you can also infiltrate these groups and get them that way. But when you infiltrate and also do all the brainstorming to come up with the ideas, who's the terrorist? Number eight, co-opting outsiders, turning them into insiders. You have never heard a more neutered individual than Bernie Sanders today.
the man who is calling for revolution. Every other sentence for his entire campaign in 2016 and 2020, the guy is now Joe Biden's biggest fan. These two bros are hugging it out, trying not to break each other's bones. They're very brittle. They put him on a committee. They put him in charge of finances. This is the funniest thing ever. The guy who wants free healthcare, free education, free energy, free housing, the guy who wants to give everything for free is in charge of budgeting under Biden. That is incredible. Talk about the fox guarding the hen house. So Bernie was on a show called Talking Points. You have not seen a man this neutered before.
Virtually every major crisis that we are facing, he is prepared to deal with. I have not seen a president in my lifetime who has done that. Don't think that he can snap his fingers, no matter what he may or may not believe, and make things happen.
But there are executive actions that he could take.
All right, look,
student debt and other things that he could do. We can agree.
He could not say anything that he wanted to say because now he's an insider. He has to play the game. And if he doesn't, he's out. And this is the first time anyone's ever listened to him. He was always the crazy guy with the crazy hair banging on podiums. And finally, they put him in some position of power. But that position comes with strings. That means you can't say certain things. Same thing has happened with AOC. She's getting attacked from the left, from people like Jimmy Dore and Kyle Kulinski, because she's not standing up for any of the things she said she supported, like Medicare for All, because she knows Nancy Pelosi is in charge and she will smack her down when she gets out of line. So now, to keep that sweet gig and that $1 million budget that every congressperson gets, she has to toe the line. And that's what she's going to do. You make the outsider the insider and you have pacified them. Number 10, algorithmically squelching people. This is silent but deadly, like the greatest fart on earth. They are able to, without telling you how the algorithms work, everyone from YouTube to Twitter to Facebook, they decide what gets seen and what gets buried. And sometimes they do it so subtly, you barely even notice. So I heard Jimmy Dore, who's a very left guy, he's a big Bernie guy. He talks about how, you know, he's got, I think, close to 1 million subscribers, but they don't let him get above 1 million. They really throttled his growth. And his YouTube videos aren't getting the views that they used to get. Same thing with Kyle Kulinski, who's also a lefty who's very critical of the left. They're not getting the views that they used to get, and that their subscriber numbers would lead you to believe that they would get. So they're basically being squelched and contained. And same thing with searches. I've noticed this. So I was looking to make fun of myself, you know, like for one of these covers for my videos. And I was looking for a fat photo to put my face on. When I Googled it, Google showed me all fat acceptance results, you know, how good it is to be obese, and how, you know, there's discrimination and we must understand. Not one photo of a fat guy that I actually needed. So, you know, they are sculpting our reality, and these algorithms are the means by which they do it. And it's extremely powerful, and it's extremely subversive, because you can't really see it. It's, you know, it's unless you're tracking the stats, you will never know. Number 12, boogeymen. Boogie persons. You got to be politically correct now. So QAnon. Yeah, there are some kooks who believe in, God knows what that theory is, that there's child molesters, and Trump was sent by God to fight off the child molesters. Yeah, there's a few people online who are signed up to this nonsense, just like the flat earthers, just like the 9/11 people, just like the deep state people. There's a lot of people signed up for all kinds of theories. A lot for a room, Not a lot for a country. These are fringes. These are tiny specks. Same thing with white supremacists. These are people without any cultural, institutional power, financial power. They've got nothing. They are masturbating 86% of their waking hours. Whenever they're not using those sticky fingers to Google something insane or to go on Reddit, they are masturbating. These people are losers, but they are very easy to make into boogeymen. The right does the same. Oh, this right and left thing. I'm getting exhausted. But same thing. You have these crazy people making up genders or making proclamations. I'm not having kids because I'm trying to be green. You know, like all kinds of nuttiness. And it's very easy to take it and blow it up while doing nothing, because it looks like work, right? Like, look at the right. They're so busy fighting the culture war and they're winning. Look at the left. They're going after QAnon. They've created an internal commission inside of the FBI or NSA to go after white supremacists, like two idiots in a room that just finished masturbating. Hopefully the FBI doesn't break in when their fingers are all involved, but very powerful because they are distractions. Number 13, weaving narratives. And these narratives are so powerful. And the stories that get reported and the stories that do not get reported, just as important. So for example, the most recent, of course, is the fear narrative for COVID and the different Delta strains and all the, you know, the Lambda and, you know, and all the other Greek alphabet words. Someone posted today a quote from an expert on CNN, and CNN is core to this fear-mongering, as is MSNBC. The guy said something like, your child is just waiting for another child to kill them. It was an insane quote. Throughout COVID in the United States through mid-August of 2021, early August 2021, 424 children died of COVID. That is absolutely tragic. However, these kids, a lot of them had comorbidities. And if you look at it statistically, it is a rounding error compared to the number of kids that are out there and the number of potential situations where you can be exposed. It doesn't even rank anywhere on the list of the biggest risks to kids, like driving. You know, I think it was over 4,000 kids die in car accidents, suicide, and a whole bunch of other things. You don't get to the hundreds until like number 10. So we're talking about an insane narrative. And this is being promoted. Why? Fear passes emergency legislation. So the longer the emergency lasts, the more legislation you can pass. And they don't even hide it. Rahm Emanuel, who was President Obama's chief of staff and then became mayor of Chicago, he famously said, never let a serious crisis go to waste. And they are not letting this one go to waste at all. Another narrative is race, because if you divide people, you conquer them. They're so busy fighting with each other over color, they're not looking at the money or the people with money who are helping weave these narratives that divide us. Same thing with wage gap.
Women make up about half our workforce, but they still make 77 cents for every dollar a man earns.
And women are paid 80 cents on the dollar, Black women 61 cents, Native American women 58 cents, Latinas 53 cents.
Women still make only 79 cents for every dollar a man makes.
It took more than 15 months for a woman to earn the same amount that a man made in 12.
The 23-cent gender pay gap is simply the difference between the average earnings of all men and women working full-time. It does not take into account differences in occupation, job tenure, hours worked per week. When all of these factors are taken into consideration, the gap narrows to the point of vanishing. The wage gap myth has been repeatedly discredited, but it will not die.
NPR has done this, so it's not even like some wild theory. The real wage gap, if you control for similar job level and job function and industry, is somewhere between 2 and 7%. still an issue to be addressed. And there's some theories about why. One big one is, and this is, I think, a Swedish study that said that women don't negotiate raises as aggressively and they don't switch jobs as often. So, you know, there are logical explanations and there are ways to address it. But consistently, from Obama to Biden to all of the activists and the media, they continue to say, oh, the wage gap is like 30% or women get paid 70 cents on dollar. I mean, it's observably untrue, because if I had a company and I could fire all the men and save 30%, I would do it tomorrow. And in fact, women are even better workers in a lot of cases. So you're going to be ahead in terms of performance and in terms of profits. Sign me up. So this is just provably untrue, but it is a tool to achieve an agenda. And this is how elites get their way. And we're fighting over gender now. So we're fighting over race on this front, over gender on the other front. So keep us divided. Keep us divided. Division is distraction. Number 14, protect the sacred cows. And a lot of this is enforced through media. So perfect example, Kyle Dunnigan, who's a comedian who does a lot of these face swap videos, and he does killer impressions of Biden, and he does a great one of Bill Maher. He does a sketch show with these face swaps called The Fresh Prez of DC. And he makes fun of Bill Maher because Bill Maher can't find one funny thing about Joe Biden. Not one.
Okay, and finally, new rule. Comedians can't make fun of Joe Biden. Because it's impossible. Because he's been great. I know a bunch of fat people are disappointed. Because trying to make fun of Joe Biden is like praying to God. A complete waste of time. Okay, that's our show. I want to thank my guests, Benjamin Netanyahu and Pete Davidson.
Who's this Joe Biden everyone keeps talking about?
Even now, with Trump gone, tons of funny things about Trump. Not one about Joe Biden. Not when he's falling up the stairs. Not when he's saying crazy things. Nothing. Because they protect their own. Same thing with Cuomo, until they couldn't anymore. He was just touching too many ladies. Kissing, touching, I don't know what he's up to. But that's another guy they protected. Even Patrice Cullors, who the New York Post published that she bought these four houses and put photos of there. They didn't put the addresses, but the social networks and these other media companies banned those stories. You couldn't even put them out because they said it doxed her or released her information to the public, which it didn't. It didn't release her addresses or anything. They will protect their sacred cows until they can protect them no longer. So that's why you kind of need right-wing media to balance the left wing. And then when the right wing is in power, you need the left wing. But it's not even, you know, like hold everyone to the same standard. You know, if you're going to scrutinize the hell out of Trump, you got to do the same thing with Biden. Black people are in charge. They have subtly already been in charge. The black culture is the dominant culture. If you go to the white suburbs, what are white kids doing? They're rapping. They're listening to Kanye. They're listening to Drake. When you go to Baltimore, into the inner city, are they singing Robert Goulet?
To reach the unreachable.
The first name that came to mind. I was like, who's the whitest guy on earth? Are they singing Harry Connick Jr.? Are they singing Billie Eilish? No, they're not. The dominant culture, musically, in terms of cinema, in terms of just cool, in terms of fashion, is the black culture. And now it's going into the political realm, the business realm, and everywhere else. It reminds me of what Chris Rock said about baseball.
We don't really need baseball, but baseball needs us. Fact is, Black America decides what's hot and what young people get excited about. Ask the men's golf tour or the women's tennis tour. Why don't you just ask Mitt Romney? You lose Black America, you lose young America. And make no mistake, baseball is losing.
you look at baseball, the age of the fan has been going up. I think it's somewhere crazy, like 56 years old. And the audiences have been dwindling. And there's problems with the game. But also, there aren't black kids who are being recruited to play the sport. It's either too expensive or there's more opportunity in basketball or football. So they go there. And the black culture drives American culture. And there are so many smart black leaders that are surfacing. Glenn Lowry, John McWhorter, Chloe Valdery, Thomas Chatterton Williams, some of whom I've talked to on this podcast. And they are now charged with saving the country. That's it. Thanks for listening. You can go to patreon.com/McFuture to support the show and listen to the full episode and lots of other exclusives. And please, if you can, write a review on Apple Podcasts for this show. It really helps with visibility, especially if it's a good review. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. See you next week on the McFuture.